We have a ton of stuff to talk about from just today alone, which we'll get to in a moment. First, let's catch up a little bit on things that have happened since we last spoke on Happy Hour. First thing, I suppose, is we've got public betas released for macOS Big Sur. And I think even more importantly, because it's a first, is watchOS 7 being mm-hmm. the very first watchOS beta to be released. And what I think is interesting there is that it isn't like anything's changed with how watchOS works that I can tell. It's just they decided that now is an okay time to do a public beta for watchOS.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they've finally got confident enough that they're not going to mess it up too much. But because we have seen that in the past, right? We've seen for at least 2 years, there's been major beta seeds that have actually bricked people's watches, and the only restoration process is to send them off to Apple and get it replaced. And so they've been very hesitant on doing public betas until now. I guess now we're on the seventh version of the operating system, you'd hope they have enough confidence now where they can do these kind of system updates.
Yeah, it's not like when you brick your Apple Watch now with the public beta, you can just take it to your local Apple store and have it swapped out with a different Apple Watch. Like, it's a little trickier this year than that. But it doesn't sound like anything's been going bad since it's been released. So I know a lot of us are in the developer beta anyway, and that's not so different. That's what's gone bad in the past for some people. I've never had a problem myself, but it's just good fortune. But it's cool.
Yeah, I think Rambo has had issues with watchOS. He had to get his watch swapped last year, I think, when there was the brick inversion. But yeah, I haven't had problems running. Yeah. I run the developer beta on my watch since the beginning.
So yeah,
fine. But
and then with macOS Big Sur available, then as a public beta, many more people have access to using the redesigned version of macOS and experiencing things like the Catalyst the Mac Catalyst version of messages coming from the iPad. So I tell you what, I've been running macOS Big Sur since day one on my only Mac. I'm happy with it. I look back at like screenshots now, and it's one of those things that'll become more and more true over time. But like the difference in the user interface just dates the OS in such a way. So
yeah, I mean, we spoke about the Big Sur design before, right? Mm-hmm. And like, I think it's a lot of people were kind of, I don't know, I don't think there's much usability problems with it, really. Like, there are a few things where I feel like the old design was better, like the pull down sheets from the menus. I think was a better design than the, you know, kind of like white capsules that just appear over the center of stuff. The sheets were more, like, more connected and felt like it. But in general, I think it's fine. I do think if you are someone who's still using a non-Retina display, you're probably getting the end of the road. Like, I think that was kind of true with older macOS versions as well. Like, when they did the Yosemite redesign, they started down that path of basically ignoring the needs of non-Retina screens.
Yeah.
But especially now with Big Sur, like, there are so many other controls which are just separated by, like, a one pixel line, and then you look at a non-Retina display and it's very, very hard to tell and delineate those things. Like, my setup is I have my 15-inch MacBook Pro, but I also have connected to a non-Retina 25-inch Dell monitor, and so I've been running the Big Sur beta on through the Dell monitor, and it is, you can definitely be like, this definitely is not a Retina, is definitely not really thought about for a non-Retina experience. Sure. Which I think is fine. Yeah. Like, it's been a long time, right?
Because Apple ships Retina on everything.
Yeah, exactly. And like, if that's the biggest complaint I can have with it, I can't be too bad, because that's just basically complaining about the past. And Apple has been shipping Retina displays on Macs for, you know, a long, 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 long time now. Like, 8 years, I think, was because it started with the 2012 MacBook Pro.
That's right.
And it's just like some of these external display stuffs where, you know, I should probably upgrade to a 4K display or a 5K display. But I've been holding out for, you know, a first-party option that is yet to transpire. So, and I'm not buying the Pro Display XDR yet. So that is kind of the situation with Big Sur. Like, messages is obviously one of the things I'm most looking forward to actually using it when it comes out, because the messages app on Catalina is just so, I mean, it's like minimum viable. It's like, okay, it just about works, but don't you dare accidentally click in the search field, because then you'll be watching a spinner for 10 minutes while it tries to catch up. And all those new features, obviously the old messages app can't do. So that, you know, that's probably the biggest thing looking for Catalina, aside from the visual update. WatchOS 7 is kind of funny. Like, a lot of people on Twitter are asking me this week, should I do the WatchOS 7 public beta? I was like, I guess so, but it's really hard to like nail down something like this is so good. My favorite thing still from WatchOS 7, unfortunately, well, it depends on your perspective, but my favorite thing about it is the speedier double click gestures, like okay. going back to the switching back to the apps or opening the dock quickly versus Apple Pay. Like the canceling animations there are just so nice, and they definitely make it feel a lot faster. But in terms of like, you know, Apple's headline features, they've got what? They've got the dance workout is new. They've got sleep tracking, which I don't use, unfortunately, because I just don't think it's very good. And then they've got what? Face sharing?
Yeah, like, watch face sharing, hand wash detection version 0.5.
Yeah. <'Cause> the hand washing thing, I had it on beta 1. I had to turn it off. It just fired too often in false positive scenarios where I could, when it would fire, be like, I can see what I'm currently doing may actually sound like me, I'm washing my hands, right? But I'm not washing my hands. And it would just happen too frequently to be useful. So I had to turn it off.
Yeah. A few weeks ago, we talked on this podcast about the fact that for the first time since the Apple Watch came out, I was taking a break from it. And for, I don't know how long, maybe until the next watch is announced. And, I had a whole experience where I left town and did a work trip, didn't have the watch, you know, had a whole probably 3 weeks total without it every single day. When I got back from that trip, I kind of decided, I think it was a lot of influence from what I saw on the trip, but you know, just the number of people who have watches in general, whether it's an Apple Watch or I have a Space Explorer colleague who has an Android watch, and which I think is probably more than our 9 to 5 Google colleagues who all wear Apple watches. But I think what really got all this to say, I'm back with my Apple Watch edition, Series 5, and so
that lasted long.
Yeah, well, and you know, I think if the Apple Watch Series 6 is what we expect it to be, then I, you know, I will have maybe I'll pick up one to review, and then you know, basically, I really like my Apple Watch Ceramic Edition, and I'm not going to buy a Ceramic Edition Series 6, and I don't think I would like a new feature in a Series 6 more than the ceramic design of the Series 5.
And yeah, I mean, we don't know really yet what the Series 6 is going to be, apart from, oh, it's probably going to have a blood oxygen monitor, right?
Mm-hmm, like, yeah, and if that's it, there are so many features on this my return after a very short hiatus from the Apple Watch that I'm like, okay, I was using these just to evaluate them, and there's no longer a need to evaluate them. Features like, there are so many, but, stand alerts. I'm different from a lot of people I know in that the stand alerts, or stand ring is not a hard one to fill. It's the other ones that I have to be intent about. And so it's actually kind of annoying to get a stand alert, when I know I'm going to finish it, even if it's not in this hour, the next one. And another thing, any breathe alerts. I'm actually,
oh, yeah, breathe is stupid.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't use that all the time anyway, but things like that. And then there's things like the watch face. I'd been super into different watch faces and making them like full of complications and everything, and kind of customized. And I've settled on for this go around numerals duo, where it's like just the outline color.
And, two-tone effect, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's not even like the numbers are filled in. It's like just the outline of the numbers. And the reason I did that is because I don't like the change of going between the on mode and like the rest mode. And this is what it rests into. And so it's like, well, that's what it's going to be. It's just the only thing that changes is the brightness. And I'm finding that I like that a lot, that this like toned down version of using the watch is nice. And there have been times where it's like, aside from just I like this watch as a watch, I've done some things like I've logged a couple of workouts, which is just, I mean, for fitness stuff, like that's always where it's clicked for me anyway. And that's where it's like I get the most value. I paid for gas with Apple Pay, which is, you know, something I've done before, but it was like, oh, that is easier than like unplugging my phone or like pulling out my debit card, you know, it's cool. So,
yeah.
But the main thing is just, you know, I like it as an object and the design and everything, the material. So,
I do hope by the time WatchOS 7 is released that they do have at least like a new watch face, right? Like,
yeah, the one that they ship, the what is it, Chronograph Pro or so?
Yeah,
yeah. They show that one on all the developer pages for watchOS 7 and public beta because it's like the one visualization of a watch face that says new in this release. But it's not for me.
No. Yeah, like the original Chronograph didn't appeal to me. Chronograph Pro doesn't either, and like we obviously reported on like the Flags one. I thought the Flags one's pretty cool, but I think they probably delayed that because the Olympics aren't
right.
Next year,
that'll so probably come next year.
That'll probably come next year, right? They'll roll it out again when the Olympics hopefully do happen in 2021. But yeah, some kind of face update would be nice. Like, otherwise, I just feel like WatchOS 7's a bit of a downer, unfortunately. And again, they might be readying new features for new hardware, but unless there's something crazy, I'm not anticipating upgrading this year either. So,
yeah, I mean, I still have my same complaints. Like, for example, I have been using the feature where if you're playing music or audio from somewhere, it's like automatically your watch face where the now playing pops up. And it's less offensive to me when I'm using a digital watch face because it's a digital watch face interface. And then whenever you raise your lower your wrist, it becomes like a blurred watch face. And you know, those are all concessions, but I think that it should be much more thought out than that for always on and for analog watch faces. You know, if I were like to write a critique of Series 5 and WatchOS 6, you know, it would be the same thing carried over into WatchOS 7. Those complaints. But you know, in this kind of different approach to wearing the watch, it's like it's a digital watch. I'm going to use it in that way and not even think about it as much as I used to think about it. It's like, I have found it useful to like, oh, I'm playing, one of my favorite features on iOS 7 is the infinite playback feature where like,
I love iOS 7.
Yeah. If you play one song,
you mean iOS 14.
Yeah. That's the one. WatchOS 7, iOS 14. There we go. But if you play one song on iOS 14, it can keep playing music like that. That isn't just from your library, but from Apple Music. And it kind of makes an infinite radio station based on that song. Something you could do manually before, but now it can be automatic based on a setting. That's really neat. And so like, I'll listen to music in my AirPods and it plays from the phone. And I'm like, oh, this is a song that I'd like to save. I like the way this one's going. And I'll just like look at the watch and like add it to library and then done. So I'm kind of like returning, but in a whole different approach. I'm like hitting reset on how I think about the watch. And all of this is also in spirit of bringing back the Watch Time podcast I announced last week. That'll be back in September. So once again, every 2 weeks. And I will say, like, I think the reason that I got there was because I was looking for like new host or to discontinue that podcast. But I was talking to NASA's top scientist when I was interviewing him for Space Explored. And like, it was intimidating. It's like, okay, this is someone who is like the smartest person in terms of science. And I'm, you know, a novice in this area. And what we connected over, because it, you know, part of the intimidation was like, can I even keep his attention, like eye contact and interest? But we connected over, running and things that are not, you know, strictly science. And then it was easier to kind of, now we have this connection. It made me think like, oh, you know, of all the things that I do, I think it's good to have diverse interests and, you know, have that be a part of me. So that made me think, well, I was already signed up for this marathon in December. I'm going to work on that. I'm going to, you know, keep doing with the watch what I do with it. And, you know, maybe next year will be a bigger change for the watch than this year.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Just one more thing on what you mentioned about the autoplay music. Playing music. That is a great feature. And they're kind of borrowing from what Spotify does there, because Spotify has that built in as well. And it's just, you know, bringing Apple Music up to step. But it's stupid because it's not in the music app on Big Sur. It's just like...
That's right. We need Big Sur to... we need the music app to be a Catalyst app because it's decent on the iPad now, right? It's gotten better this year.
Like, they made the iPad music app pretty good, and Catalyst apps on Big Sur, because if you're using the optimized Catalyst apps, they're pretty good as well. And Maps is a Catalyst app on Big Sur, and that's fine. But music, last year they decided, now what we're going to do is just strip it out of iTunes. But then now, just 1 year later, they've got this whole new music experience for the iPad, but then the Mac app's already lagging behind again. Like in 13.3, in the update earlier this year, they finally got around to adding the time sync lyric stuff to the AppKit version of music, right? And now they're not even going to have the continuous auto-playing songs ready for launch either. It's like, I just feel they made the wrong choice there, unfortunately. And now we've got a kind of crappy Mac app that's also lagging behind on features just 1 year after they changed it.
Yeah, yeah. We were joking about, you know, with the Apple Silicon Macs that are based on ARM chips instead of Intel chips, we were joking that because you'll be able to run iOS apps both from the iPhone and the iPad with no changes, just developers saying it's okay and I didn't opt out, it would be preferable to be able to choose the iPad music app on the Mac because it's has more features now than the music app from Big Sur.
Yeah, and like the music app on the Mac, obviously they because it still is basically just iTunes but rebranded, it keeps all of the old like file management and all the classic features that, you know, diehard music fans really love. But if you're just an Apple Music subscriber, the iPad music app provides a much better experience. And so it would be great if you could have that experience on the Mac. And kind of what we were thinking before they even rebranded iTunes to music, they probably should have just done is like kept iTunes around in a folder and then introduced the new music app, which is like Apple Music specific, and basically shared off the iPad code base. And that would allow you to have all the new features in lockstep, right? And slowly get people to get the Apple Music app for the Mac rather than iTunes.
Yeah, I didn't think I'd want that before.
We went down the wrong path there, I think.
Yeah, I didn't think I'd want that before, but now that we're not going on that path and we're seeing the alternative play out, it's like, that would have been preferable, you know, and they have to keep it around for Windows for a bit anyway, so oh well. All right, you want to take a quick break here?
Sure. We are sponsored this week by CryptoPro, a Bitcoin and crypto ticker and portfolio app for iPhone, iPad, Mac, and the Apple Watch 2. Hit the link in the show notes to get 1 month of premium for free with code 9to5Mac. CryptoPro is an all-in-one solution for viewing crypto market prices, reading news, setting price alerts, and monitoring your portfolio. There's rich support for all of Apple's platform features, like widgets, Apple Watch complications, a menu bar item on the Mac, Siri integration, and iCloud Sync. And you can protect access to the app with Face ID and Touch ID login when you launch it. And looking ahead, CryptoPro will have iOS 14 support with home screen widgets on day one, and the developers are also planning a new stocks portfolio app as well. And you can sign up to be notified and join the test flight beta for that app using the link in the show notes too. 9to5 Mac Happy Hour listeners can get a free month of CryptoPro Premium, which unlocks real-time pricing, portfolio sync from exchanges and wallets, advanced charting, and curated market updates. Simply head to cryptopro.app and use code 9to5Mac. That's number 9, T-O, number 5, Mac. Go to cryptopro.app today. Our thanks to CryptoPro for their support of Happy Hour.
Yeah, thanks, CryptoPro. All right, let's talk about some bundle stuff, and then we'll get to Fortnite in just a little bit, and there's some funny stuff in there. I'm not sure if you've seen yet, Mayo, but we'll get to Fortnite before this is over. First up is going to be the bundle talk. And so, at a high level, we've got this new bundle with a name on it, courtesy of Mark Gurman at Bloomberg. It's a good story where he nails down that he believes this will be called Apple One. And there's different tiers of this Apple One bundle. So it's kind of, trying out how many things work out and going from there. But one of those things that'll be included is Apple News Plus. And there's a feature that we covered probably at the beginning of the summer. I mean, whenever iOS 14 was announced and released, but it got a lot more attention this week. And that's this ability for links from the web that exist in Apple News Plus, the paid service, to open in Apple News Plus if you're a subscriber because you prefer that interface and you're a subscriber, you pay that way, to open in the News Plus in the news app versus the web, which just at kind of first glance, and it's on by default, you can turn it off. I think the appeal there is that if it's paywalled on the web, but you have a News Plus subscription, you never need to worry about that. Plus you get the News Plus experience versus the web experience. But for some reason this week, a lot more folks found the feature and found it to be not what they desire. So what's changed since now when we covered this originally?
Basically, we covered this story in like June and stuff, and I think we even talked about it on the podcast before. And it is a convenient feature, right? Because when News Plus launched last year in March, and like the Wall Street Journal was part of it, but people realized that you can't use your News Plus login through Safari, you have to go through the news app. everyone was trying to find all these workarounds for easy ways. So if you see a Wall Street Journal link, to open it in the news app so they can read the story, because they're paying for it, right? And they want to read the full article. And ideally, you would just be able to log in, but that's not possible. So, you basically need shortcuts to get you into the right place in the news app to actually have a nice experience when you're using the subscription. And so that people made shortcuts and stuff last year and kind of did it ad hoc. This year, Apple's done something built into the operating system, and it works pretty well. It only happens on articles that are included in the News Plus subscription. So just generally browsing the web won't change it. If you don't subscribe to News Plus, nothing happens. And you can turn it off if you don't like it. But I think most people actually want that experience, because you're just going to be going to a website where it says you need to pay to read this story, whereas you actually have, license to view it through your News Plus subscription. So when you click the link, it opens it up. What's happened is this week is that some publishers have cottoned on to this fact, and they're annoyed that they think Apple's going to be stealing their page views away from them, because obviously in the ideal case, like for instance TechCrunch, right, they would have an article that takes them to a website and get the ad revenue and maybe subscribe directly through the web, in addition to, also you can access view off content for News Plus. But ideally, I think a lot of these publishers were like, we'll have the News Plus stuff, but because it's sideloaded off into this app, we still got a lot of opportunity to sell people subscriptions directly, right? And so they're a bit annoyed about that. There was a big tweet that went a bit viral about it, that, Apple's using their monopoly over the platform to invade users' privacy and just redirect to the news app, a moment's notice. Like, you do have to watch these features and have that eye, but I don't think this is one of those cases. This is just Apple providing a nice feature for people that have a News Plus subscription that want to be able to take better advantage of it.
It's a reaction to last year's missing feature. This year has been developed, and now it's part of iOS 14.
For sure, yeah. Right? And in a second, don't worry, we are going to crucify Apple for their monopolistic practice, but I don't think you should do that on every single thing unequivocally. You have to be objective about it. And in this case, they're just providing a feature. Should it be on by default? I think there is a debate there, because it is quite a big change in behavior. Maybe it should be a kind of thing where they ask you, right? Yeah. Like if you open the news app when you update, it should say, do you want to automatically open links from Safari in the news app when you have, when they are paywalled, or you want to activate your subscription and use it to the fullest. And it could have that screen where they have the big blue button, which is yes, please, and they have the tiny little no thanks underneath. That maybe would have been more appropriate than just turning on by default forcibly. But on the whole, I think most people are going to want this turned on, not off. So it's not anti-consumer, which is what a lot of the Twitter rati were trying to show it as, I think.
Yeah, one of the things here is that if News Plus was a thriving success on its own, then it would be a bigger issue. And if News Plus becomes that size of a business, then it's a bigger issue. But right now it's not. And so that's kind of like what we'll get to with the App Store Fortnite later on, is that in the beginning, some of these policies weren't seen as draconian, and now they are. And it's because of the size of Apple, size of the iPhone market. But for now, News Plus is kind of a struggling service within Apple that can only exist because of Apple. Who knows what would have happened to Texture, which is based on, which was kind of a group effort between a bunch of different publishers. So it wasn't even its own unique company.
Right. Apple has a responsibility to act fairly and, make sure everyone's, make sure they're not being too monopolistic and not just trying to stamp everyone else out. You have to level that with the fact that Apple also has to be able to provide features for their customers, right? I saw somebody last week complaining about the Dark Sky thing, that because, Apple bought Dark Sky, now they've destroyed all potential for third-party weather apps. And it's come on. Anyone could have acquired Dark Sky, right? And most people, and if no one had acquired Dark Sky, they'd have probably gone out of business, because that's why they wanted to get acquired. So, at the end of the day, you can't smack on Apple for everything left and right, because I think then it loses its pungency, right? You have to criticize them where it makes sense, and in cases like this, I don't think it does.
Yeah, that's the whole thing again. The idea about should Apple copy features or build features into the OS that are popular third-party apps on the platform, and the idea there, in favor of that is that just because a feature exists and is popular, Apple shouldn't be punished and not be able to provide it, their own version of it, for all users. So same thing with Pacific Sky because it's a success. And in this case, again, you know, just backing up to the core of it, it was a feature that actual paying customers missed last year. This year it'll be there. And then it's just an example of how every single change has an effect when it involves another party, in this case. But I think it's like you said, just asking would be okay too. But, on by default, I think the amount of people who are affected by this is so small right now that it's not an issue. It would only be an issue later if News Plus became wildly popular beyond where it is right now.
Yeah, and like I say, I think the majority of people would actually want this on regardless.
Sure.
In fact, it's on by default. It doesn't bother me too much.
Yeah, it's not the end of the world there. There's a new feature in iOS 14 that lets you not just share your location, but share kind of a general idea of your location. So just take a weather app, for example. Your weather in your city is probably not too different from your weather in your home. It's probably pretty similar if you go, you know, 5 miles out. And so with iOS 14, you can now give a level of permission to a weather app or any app that asks for a location permission. Just give approximate location. I don't need to be picked up on the curb here. I just need to have an idea of what is the weather like in this town. And that's not an option. And this week you wrote a really good explainer on how it all works and the thinking behind that, right?
Yeah, like, I just wanted to draw attention to something I think Apple did really well here. Like, there's been a fair few privacy, quote-unquote, features that Apple has done in recent years that I think they've been very heavy-handed about and not done so elegantly. Like the Catalina dialogues, right? Or the copy and paste banner in iOS 14 that basically serves no purpose. And it just alarms people for no reason. But this is something where it addresses a real problem, and the way they've done it and implemented it is very considerate. Like, there were plenty of stories a couple of years ago, you know, last year, year before that, where third-party weather apps had integrated analytics frameworks that were selling off user location to third parties. This isn't just some, like, hypothetical threat or maybe this could be a problem. This actually happened. And before now, there was no way for an application to even say, look, I don't want your precise location. I just need to know roughly where you are. And so a weather app, even if they wanted to be well-behaved, they had no option but to ask for your location, and that would give them precise, basically to the street level, you know, often to the exact house number where you are, depending on the strength of your GPS signal. Mm-hmm. In iOS 14, Apple's added this new option. So basically, there are now basically two axes of location services permissions. So you have the permission, which is like, do you want to allow permission while the app is open to have your location? Do you want to allow the app to have always location access, i.e. when it's in the background? And then you have the other, like, axis or dimension, which is, do you want the app to get your exact location or do you want it to get an approximate location? And I think if you think about it, most apps that you grant location permissions to, they probably don't need your precise GPS coordinates to do their job. Obviously, if you're using a turn-by-turn navigation app like Apple Maps or Google Maps or something, that's going to need precise location. But, you know, a weather app or maybe, like, the Apple used this example of the TV app. So
sure, yeah.
Streaming services need to know where you are because they have licensing deals about only this content can be available in this country, right? And if they can't determine your location, they're not allowed to show the content at all. But they don't need to know that you're on 123 Brick Lane. They just need to know that you're in the United States or you're in Britain. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So now in iOS 14, the TV app opts into approximate location only, so it can know roughly where you are and show you the content that you can actually access in your region, but it doesn't need to know precisely where you are. It doesn't even need to have the chance that somehow that data could be stored and sent off elsewhere. And so the way this approximate location feature works in iOS 14 is that an app developer can volunteer to say, we only want approximate location, but also the user can always pick if they want to limit a particular app. By default, all apps get full access, just like before. So they're not, like, disrupting the current app ecosystem. But say you download a new app and it says, do you want to allow this app to access your location? In that alert dialogue, there'll be a little toggle which says precise. It'll be on. You can tap it and it'll go off. And then the app will start receiving approximate location updates instead of precise location updates. And the app knows the preference. So if it's an app that really needs full location to work, Apple is letting the app say, you know, present some interface, which is like, look, we really need you to have full location because this isn't this reason. Please go to settings and turn it on. So they're not just leaving them out in the cold. There is a path here to actually get the customer back on track. And you can actually see this for yourself with the Apple Maps app in iOS 14. If you go into settings, privacy, location services, turn off precise location for Apple Maps, then launch the Maps app, you won't get a small little dot. You'll get this wide circle. And at the top, it will say precise location off. You can carry on using the application perfectly normally. But when you go to like navigate to a place, it will then pop up and say, you need to allow us to have precise location information. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to route you. Do you want to turn this on temporarily? So basically for the duration of your session, or if you want to turn it on permanently, if you go into settings and do it. And the way they even do the approximate location is actually quite clever. So, you know, like a naive approach would basically be like, whatever your real location is, just randomly pick some area near it, right? And just repeat that a few times every time someone wants your location. Well, that has problems, A, in that if you have enough random requests, an app could like nefariously reconstitute your real location. But even just from a user perspective, say if you're like on a state border and you're doing approximate location and the randomness puts you on the other state, well, then your weather app would be telling you you're somewhere else than where you actually are. So they cleverly use a special algorithm that approximates your location, but without making it seem wrong. So it will. So if you're near a state border, it will make sure your randomized location is still within the actual state that you're in. It's not going to be centered on where you are, but it will be within the right area. And if you're in a densely populated zone, the kind of region that you get for the approximate location is smaller because there's lots of stuff around. And so if an app needs to provide location relevant results, it needs to be closer. So it'll be a distance of like 2 or 3 miles. So your real location will be in this like 2 to 3 mile radius, essentially. But if you're in like an open field, you're in a forest, the radius will be like 10 kilometers, be much bigger. So it adapts naturally. And if you go to state lines or borders to different countries, it will make sure that the approximate location is still actually in where you would be expect it to. So they've really thought it through. It, you know, it offers a genuine privacy benefit without like uprooting the entire app store, and it gives apps the opportunity to like campaign and say, look, we actually do need full location, please can you let us do this here, here and here. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really clever.
Yep. All right. And but before we get to Fortnite, there was other game news this week.
It's just endless, right?
Yeah. And you know, I guess this comes from what Microsoft, from Stadia, and even from Facebook, where they all want to have their own version of a game subscription service that goes through an app on the App Store. So you download the app and then you've got access to games. You know, similar to Arcade, Apple Arcade, in that it's the App Store and you use the service to subscribe to any number of games. And even this week we saw a setup. The subscription service for Mac apps have a version of this for the App Store, where they use it's kind of a side verification system to let you have access to App Store apps. So these are apps that have been approved on the App Store. Apple won't allow these third-party game subscription apps on the App Store. I mean, they'll let the app be there, but not the games, because their reasoning is the App Store has its policy of all apps need to go through review. And they're not reviewing the games in the service. They're just reviewing the container. And that's their whole reason for not letting these things come through. And it's just one more big issue in the pile of antitrust, and is Apple treating developers fairly, especially with what they're able to do on their own. So what's your take on this stuff?
Yeah. So game streaming services specifically are what under contention here. So that's like basically the game is running on a server somewhere else. You get sent a video of it. Hmm. You input your controls on the screen and that gets sent back to the server, which actually is rendering the game in real time. And so if you have a streaming service, like Microsoft can add new games to the service at any time. And that is what Apple quoted in their statement as the reason why they're not going to allow it, because they want to be able to review every single game. And so
do you think the decision begins there? Or do you think they look at that and say, it doesn't quite fit our vision for the App Store? Now, how do we qualify it? You know, what do we call this?
Well, it's interesting that the rules that basically outlaw this were introduced and added explicitly to the App Store review guidelines in late 2017. So if you want to be all conspiracy theory about it, late 2017 is probably when Apple Arcade was starting to be thought up and invested in inside of Apple, because it launched in March 2019, right? So just about the start of 2018 sounds about the right time when it probably began inside. So if you want to go for an anti-competitive argument, they added it to the rule set to make Apple Arcade stand on its own. Personally, I don't really subscribe to that theory too much, because like, they have competition in loads of areas. They don't just outright ban the applications.
All of the other games in the App Store that you've
Yeah, and all other streaming services, sure. Right? Yeah. Music streaming services, you can be in the App Store. They don't have a rule that says you can't have a music service in the App Store. Like, that doesn't exist. The rules do say you have to give Apple a cut, right? But the game streaming services aren't complaining about the 30% commission. They're complaining they're not allowed in the App Store at all. Like, that's the problem. Like, and the idea that, oh, Apple wants to be able to review every single game for, you know, the security and safety of their customer base is silly, because, you know, Netflix can add any content it wants to its streaming service. So anyone that downloads Netflix can watch any video they decide to add to the service. It's not Apple sitting there going, oh, here's a new Netflix video, we better review this before we let our iOS customers see it. Like, that just doesn't happen. And all the games, it's not like these are Wild West services. These are huge brands, yeah, like Microsoft, Sony, Google. All of the games on these services are reviewed anyway, because they're reviewed if you sell them as box software. They have, it's just like going to the cinema, right, where you have the 18 plus review, you know, you have that rating board. There's the same rating boards for games. But so I don't really think Apple's argument that
there are games on the App Store that are allowed with, you know, adult ratings or I guess mature ratings, that you would say, well, maybe those are the ones that they're worried about, but they're on the App Store already. So,
right, you can get a lot of rubbish on the App Store. Don't worry about that.
What it probably should be in this case is let it happen and then react to the bad apples, the cases of that's abuse. That's not what we envision. But to say that on principle, every game on the service needs to go through review, it's not equal to other policies that they have, whether it's music or video.
And these game streaming services are going to be a thing. Like, Microsoft xCloud is basically being bundled for free with Xbox Game Pass, which millions of people have. So come September or whatever, when this service launches, there'll be loads of Android tablet owners, loads of Android phone owners who can start playing, you know, Xbox quality games on their phone. Meanwhile, the iPhone and iPad users can't. Like, it will be a problem and it will be noticeable. So I don't think this is a sustainable equilibrium. It's just, how long does it take for them to actually thrash out some deal? Like, I think it'd be a fair cop if the new rule was like, we allow game streaming services where every game must have been, you know, rated and reviewed by the ESRB or whatever the games board is called. And so that stops like the Wild West problem. And, you know, that gives some safety controls. Maybe the apps can only have to have a 17 plus rating, because they did that for a while with like RSS readers, because you could add any website in the world. They made all the RSS readers in the App Store rate themselves as 17 plus, so you had to be an adult to download the app in the first place. Like, if they want to be protective, rules like that are fine. Even if they're saying, oh, we don't like game streaming services because we can't review every game that's on there, if that's really their problem, add a process to let these services have their games reviewed by Apple. Like, the problem isn't, I'm sure Microsoft will be like, fine, go review all the games, there's no problem by us. But Apple's just sitting there like, we can't review these games because we don't have a way to do it.
Like,
that's why it's stupid. Like, I would fully expect these services to be having an argument about the 30% cut, the 15% cut, all that stuff, which is what we see with Spotify and Netflix and all the other stuff. The fact we're having a debate about whether they're allowed in the App Store at all is just outrageous to me. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And what Facebook did this week, I guess, was they just released their game container app with no games in it as kind of a statement. To kind of say, like, we're ready for this service on iOS, but sorry, Apple won't let you have it.
Right, yeah, like,
which is pretty good. I mean, regardless of what you think about Facebook, it's a pretty good way to make a point.
Yeah, and Microsoft stopped doing their beta because they realized it was unsustainable and they were annoyed about it, and they've, you know, filed formal complaints and stuff. But so far, Apple's sticking to its guns, and I don't think it's the kind of thing that they can uphold forever. Like, gaming stream service is going to be popular. It'd be like saying you can't have Netflix on the App Store. It's just insane, yeah, right? Like, and behind the scenes, Apple can work out a revenue cut if they want to. Maybe they can do the Amazon deal. I'm not even sure this even is about money, really, because I think they should just let them be reader apps. Like, if you sign up inside the app, you gave Apple a cut. If you just log in with your account, it's free. Like, which is exactly how, you know, Spotify operates, exactly how Netflix operates. I don't know why the Apple PR came up with this rule about like, oh, we have to review the games. Like, it doesn't hold up to any scrutiny. So whatever their true reasoning is, they need to change their mind and they need to be more cooperative about it. Yep. Otherwise, people are just going to be angry.
Yep. All right, let's take a break there.
Let's talk about our second sponsor for this week. It is our friends at Smile Software and Text Expander. Text Expander removes the repetition out of work so you can focus on what matters most. Save time typing and boost your productivity. Text Expander helps you manage everything that you type repeatedly. Email addresses, phone numbers, common message replies, and so much more. Turn the things you type into reusable snippets to access them time and time again. Your snippets can be something simple like a phone number or like a long form with fill-in fields and automatically calculated days. Text Expander works everywhere you type: Slack, Google Docs, Trello, email apps, web browsers, the lot. And it goes beyond simple find and replace. You can customize your reusable snippets with fill-in fields and pop-up lists, so you can quickly stamp out an invoice with easily editable fields to change only the bits that need to be customized for each individual. If you've ever written something twice, there's a good chance you could work smarter and use a Text Expander snippet instead. It's not just about automating repeat work. Reusing snippets ensures consistency in your messaging. Text Expander is available for macOS, iPhone, iPad, Windows, and Chrome. And Text Expander for Teams makes it super easy to manage and share snippets across your company. Again, unlock your productivity with Text Expander. Listeners to this show can get 20% off their first year subscription. Visit textexpander.com/podcast to learn more and sign up. That's textexpander.com/podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Text Expander. It's one of my absolute favorite services. Let's talk about Fortnite. Fortnite did this thing today that is pretty remarkable in terms of how it was planned and organized and orchestrated, where it's in the middle of, you know, Apple antitrust hearings on is App Store policy fair and legal, or should there be some change in around, you know, different reasons to make the App Store operate different from what how Apple wants it to. It's after the major, spat between Basecamp, the developers of the Hey email app, and Apple, which Apple kind of came out on top on that one. Hey made a compromise. And just while we're discussing things like these subscription gaming services and everything, it's like all this antitrust stuff is happening at once. And Fortnite, you know, What do you think? Bigger than Spotify in terms of reach here, or you know, because Spotify's been at this for years, but they've kind of been out there on their own on debating, you know, the 30% cut, which goes down to 15% after a year of solid subscriptions. But they've been out in the open, you know, doing a legal fight, probably sparked so much of this antitrust stuff that's happening in courts. But Fortnite by Epic Games, they're new to this, and that they've been like on stage at Apple events demoing their game on new devices. Apple features Fortnite in the App Store because it's a wildly popular game. If you recall back to the group FaceTime bug that was found by a kid who was playing Fortnite with his friends, yeah, when he realized he could hear people he group FaceTime before they answered. So it's in, yeah, the culture.
Apple makes loads of money off Fortnite in-app purchases. It's always like, you know, in the top five top grossing apps in the App Store because of that. They're just the in-app purchase cosmetics and V-Bucks and everything else.
Yeah, there's a lot of components to Fortnite that it's not just, I guess, you play the game, a subscription to play with friends. And then there's a lot of components that you can add on to, just like a lot of other games, a lot of in-app purchases.
Yeah, like the core game base free, and then you have to pay for cosmetics and skins.
Which are wildly popular within the game.
Exactly.
So,
and to date, yeah, you've only been able to do that on the App Store with in-app purchase.
Yeah.
Right.
And they made a server-side change in their game that didn't require a new version of their app to go through App Store review, even by accident. To say, now you can pay us directly and we'll make that money directly. And they made this change on both iOS App Store and the Google Play Store. And they're even open about it. They're saying, we don't think that the App Store policies are fair, whether it's Apple or Google, but Apple makes the headlines. Then Apple was first to to act on it. They couldn't ignore the issue because Epic Games was making it an issue, like forcing it quite aggressively. And so what did Apple do? They didn't work behind the scenes with Epic. They didn't put them, on notice to say, fix this within the next 14 days or we're going to remove your app. They just removed the app on the same day. And they cited the reason being that they violated App Store policy by changing the payment method behind the scenes without even going through app review. And so I think that's why it didn't get like a warning, is because it wasn't an App Store update that got through by accident.
If it had been in the app, they would have submitted the update and got rejected.
Or been accidentally been approved, and then it would have needed to have been fixed before it got updated again in the future or been removed.
Sure. Which is like Hey, right? So yeah, Hey
accidentally got through.
Yeah, Hey 1.0 was submitted and released, and then Apple realized, oh, they made a mistake, so they stopped approving the updates. Then we had the Hey debacle in like May.
Yeah.
But Hey never got pulled from the App Store, right?
Right.
Whereas what Epic Games has done is pretty clearly a PR stunt, right? Like, they had everything ready to go, and they, even when they added the UI to the app, it was very clearly like, you can buy with the App Store for $9.99, or you can buy directly through us for $7.99. Like, just to hammer home, you know, Apple's charging you and making prices higher.
Yeah.
Right? And so, from the enforcement of the App Store, obviously it's perfectly understandable. This is against the rules. You're getting cut from the store until they... And the moment Epic's like, we're giving up on this, we'll just take that rule out, Apple will reapprove them, right? There's nothing controversial on that side of the... it's not a debate. They went against the rules, so they got pulled. What's... Obviously, the effect is, though, that there's now huge media attention, public attention. It's like doing a public protest, right? Mm-hmm. They did something they knew would cause headlines, and they knew it would actually affect iOS customers, because Epic's taking a risk that they're not going to accrue any new players for the next few weeks until this gets sorted out, but it's going to inconvenience people on the iOS platform that one of the biggest games in the world is not available on their devices.
Yeah, one that Apple's used to promote their devices. And if you have the game already installed, I think you're not affected. But if you've never installed the game or you delete it, I don't believe you can get it back, and you certainly can't go and find it for the first time. You can find App Store promotions about it, but you can't find the actual game.
Right, yeah. And so from Epic's perspective, the amount of like damage is probably quite limited, because it's not like all current Fortnite players on iOS are still going to be able to play the game.
Yeah.
So they probably saw that trade-off, and they were like, look, And the CEO has been quite vocal on Twitter against the App Store policy for like the last year. And I'm sure they've had like behind the scenes talks with Apple about, you know, guys, could we do this? Could we do that? And, you know, Apple just held firm. And so they're like, okay, screw it. We're just going to do a big public showing. And, you know, Apple responded in the only way they really could. Because like if Epic did this and then Apple didn't pull the app immediately, it would just set a precedent for everyone else to do it as well. And it's clearly against the rules. So, you know, I'm not mad at Apple for pulling it, but it's like, it's clearly coming to it's like a rubber band that's getting really, really stretched sure. now. And at some point it's going to snap, right? Like, you're having everybody piling on Apple for, you know, mostly legitimate reasons that the App Store policy needs to change in some way. And like on Android, before they did this stunt, Epic released Fortnite outside of the Google Play Store. And everything was cheaper if you just download the app directly. But then they saw that they didn't get player acquisition. They didn't get enough people downloading it. So they had to go back and re-add Fortnite to the normal Google Play Store again, because obviously Android allows side loading. But even Fortnite was not powerful enough to actually outweigh the influence of the store. So Epic had to kind of walk back and just reintroduce the app to the Google Play Store again.
Oh, yeah.
So you can imagine if Apple had side loading on iOS, you're probably going to have the same effect. Like, some big apps will offer, you know, direct downloads, but the majority of it's still going to come through the store. And maybe that's the end conclusion here, because people are going to be mad at Apple for not allowing categories apps at all, like game streaming. People are going to be mad about the cost and the fees. Like, 30% is high. Is it too high? Who knows? But it's not even a competition, because there's nothing to compete against, because Apple's the only option. So, and now Epic's what they've done, like, they filed a lawsuit, and
yeah,
they even had a video ready.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So they this was the first thing this morning whenever they made the change in the app. And that alone made headlines, because it's like, they're obviously doing this protest against Apple and Google, and something is going to have to give here. Probably in retrospect, what would be the thing for Apple to do is like just give them the 2-week warning and, you know, forget about the money in that time frame, but just to like make it not so intense, kind of, you know, cool the room down a little bit to say, we're going to remove the app in 2 weeks unless you change this. Then they would probably not change it within 2 weeks and we'd still be here. But, but what it let Epic Games do was the moment it was pulled, they released an advertisement for a new campaign in the game tonight that is all kind of trolling Apple's 1984 ad, where they are kind of saying, you know, here comes the Mac so that IBM will control the future of computing, you know, basically. And we won't have this Orwellian 1984 future.
Yeah, it's called 1980 Fortnite.
Yeah, 1980 Fortnite. Yeah, it's so targeted. And that's one thing, you know, okay. But then within an hour of being pulled from the App Store, they also announced that they're going to file a lawsuit against Apple. And they published the material. I mean, it's all documented. And so clearly that was prepared as well. So they have an ad campaign and a lawsuit in which they say they're not going to seek damages in terms of money. They just want this policy to change. And you know,
they want to be able to collect full revenue.
Yeah. Purchase. I mean, it is about money, but, yeah. but they're not saying we're losing out on this money Apple owes us.
They're not suing for damages, I guess.
Right. Yeah. And here's a funny thing. I'm not sure if you saw it yet, because this came up after we began recording, but, 9to5 Mac is cited in the paperwork on the lawsuit.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's a story from our colleague, Michael Podek, who says, the headline was Apple hits 1.5 billion active devices with 80% of recent iPhones and iPads running iOS 13. This is from January 2020. So it's just to say how popular they are, but like they're using that article as like a public citation of making their case. And so we've got a little bit of an involvement in the lawsuit, I guess, in terms of being evidence.
That's funny.
Yeah. Glad it wasn't one of us.
If Epic's doing this, other companies are complaining, Microsoft and Google are obviously unhappy with the game streaming stuff, like, it's only going to advance the positions of the Judiciary Committee or the European Union that are doing these cases. I don't know what the resolution is going to be, and I think the Judiciary Committee in the US is meant to be releasing at least a preliminary report mm-hmm. by the end of this month, so maybe there'll be an update soon. I think it's pretty clear that the status quo is not going to stand.
Correct. Right? Like, yeah.
Apple is not going to be able to have a future where they have 100% control of the App Store and charge 30%.
Because even if things are the same right now, there'll always be new leadership to try again. There'll always be this effort to try again and get a different decision. It isn't like we're going to have one decision to rule them all. And it says Apple and Google are treating everyone fairly and you can never challenge us again. It's going to be, even if things are the same for now, there'll still be this effort to make that change in the future. And it's just a
matter of
time.
For a while, for a few years, it was basically just Spotify complaining, right? Then Netflix joined, and then now it's just like a whole floodgate. So you've got right. Tile complaining, you've got Facebook complaining.
Yeah, you have Tile complaining before there's even hardware out that competes with them.
You've got everyone complaining left, right, center. Some people complaining fairly, some people just, you know, wanting some free PR, right? Like, and it's pretty clear that the current policies are going to have to change in some way. It's just really not clear how they're going to change.
That's like, right.
Is Apple going to say, okay, you can use alternate payment methods on our platform? Are they going to say, okay, you can install apps outside of the App Store? Are they going to say, look, you still will have all these rules, but you are allowed to tell people to go to the website to sign up instead of going in our app? Because that's the thing that, like, Netflix...
Yeah, and it seems like Apple's not going to make... Like, they're not going to volunteer the change. They're going to do the least that they have to do because they don't want to give away too much. And as soon as they make one change, it's going to be like, okay, well, now that was effective. Let's push for more. They're going to do only what's required by law in different regions, it seems like.
Yeah, I think we've seen their strategy of the they've chosen their rule set.
Yeah.
They're sticking by it. They're going to push through all of this stuff happening, all of these protests, until they're like basically forced to change the rules. Like, until they get into a courtroom, they're not going to negotiate. They've chosen their rule set. They're all standing behind it. The time to change the rules was last month or the month before that, and they definitely haven't done it.
Yeah.
So at this point, they're too far gone. If they walk back now, it's like, what's the point? They could have just done it before. So Apple is not going to change the rules. They're going to have to, their rules are going to be forced upon them. But that is like a whole, complicated thing that will take months and months and years for all the legal stuff to resolve. But clearly, there is no argument anymore. Something is going to change. It's just we don't know what yet.
Yeah, and as we're talking, we're doing our live episode on YouTube, and I'm following along in the chat, and some people have said that you can restore your access if you delete the game and you have it in your purchase history. So that's possible. Just kind of a logistics thing. And then the other thing that's interesting is that the hashtag free Fortnite is the number two trending hashtag in the world right now. So they've nailed their execution in terms of, you know, we're going to have a campaign against Apple or Google, and Apple bit first, you know, and on Google, it seems like they've got no action yet.
Google is less technically, the Google rule set for the Play Store says you're not allowed to use alternate payment methods, but they're very lax. They let loads of companies use alternate payment methods and just let it happen.
Nice. All right. Yeah. So that's this week in Fortnite. It will surely change in the next week or two, because something has to give, even if it's just that nothing has changed, and that's still interesting. I'm not sure where you see this going. What's your prediction?
That's the problem. It's the resolution's the thing that's impossible. Like, everyone's kind of like, okay, something's going to change. We're just all waiting to, like, I guess we're waiting for the judiciary report, probably, from the US or the European report.
Yeah.
The European report's not due for, like, another year, so it's just more time for everyone to have public demonstrations.
Yeah, I think maybe the better question is which major company is the next to push back against Apple and do one of these campaigns, because
Netflix could do, like, a day off, like just not stream on iOS for a whole day or something.
Yeah,
like, because you know, that ultimately is the only way these companies can really affect change at the moment, is basically doing virtualized protests. Like, they can't do anything else, they're beholden to the rules. So the Epic thing was, you know, very clever marketing, and they clearly had the, you know, promotional campaign ready to back it up, and so maybe we'll see more of that, like, and you know, it puts Apple in a tense spot, and It really doesn't seem like they're going to change their mind. Like, you could have 100 companies protest, Apple's still going to stick by it until they're forced to change from a government body.
Yeah. Just objectively speaking, I mean, you know, I don't have a dog in this fight. It's like, they're two very successful companies. They can handle their own. But, you know, I guess my take on this is that Apple's rule set is being challenged at a larger level than just as it relates to Fortnite. And so, you know, how that plays out will take a matter of time, a lengthy matter of time. In terms of Epic Games, what I'm watching for, I guess, is how long do they hold out, or do they return to the App Store, and then after they've made their point, and then
they could just put the app back onto, they could say tomorrow, okay, we're going to take our direct payment method.
Yeah, I guess that's my reckon, is that they give it a couple of weeks to make their point, and then once the interest fades and they're back on the App Store, but, you know, with the big disclaimer of, we're not happy about it, you know.
Oh, and when this goes to a law, into a legal courtroom, there will be screenshots of the Fortnite slider that says, look, Fortnite could charge $9.99 through the Apple App Store, but with the direct payment option, they could give customers a 20% discount, like, because governments hate prices going up. So it's a perfect screenshot from that. It was, like, engineered perfectly.
Yeah, that's right. All right, let's talk about a couple more things before we head off for this week. The first is a report of a new bundle on Apple TV Plus, not the service, but Apple TV, the app, and then the Apple TV Channels feature. When I first saw the headline, I was like, what it is that CBS All Access will be bundled with Showtime. So if you have one or the other, you can get both for the same price or save a buck or so. What's the breakdown there?
Right. So CBS and Showtime are owned by the same parent company. Mm-hmm. So that's part one. What Bloomberg is reporting here is that starting as soon as next week, if you subscribe to TV Plus, which is $4.99 a month, You'll be able to get both the CBS All Access Apple TV channel and the Showtime Apple TV channel for $9.99, when previously they cost $10.99 and $9.99 each. So you're basically getting an entire extra service for no additional charge, as long as you're a TV Plus subscriber.
As long as you, so you've got to pay for TV Plus, and then you're eligible for the bundle.
Right. So if you assume that you never paid for TV Plus before, you're saving $5, right? Because they're $10.99 each, and so if you're adding one on, then you're paying $5 to save $5, right? And you're getting more content at the same time. Like, it seems like a pretty good deal. I mean, you said you subscribe to CBS All Access.
Yeah, right? I subscribe to CBS All Access because I'm an old person and I watch 60 Minutes in the evening news and the morning news and a replay of The Tonight Show with Stephen Colbert. So I do that through the TV app on the Mac mostly. That's where.
And you have TV Plus, right?
And I have TV Plus because I have the free trial, and then I'll plan to renew for a year anyway. So there's that.
Right. So you'll be getting basically all of Showtime's content for free.
Yeah, I don't pay for Showtime, and I'm not sure because there's not like I think Showtime is more in line with like HBO, where there's got to be one or two shows that you catch up, you follow all throughout the year, and that you subscribe to. Versus for me, like I like CBS All Access because I also get my local news there too, and it fills that need, but. And CBS All Access, they recently added content because they're a Viacom company, I guess. BET, Comedy Central, MTV, Nickelodeon, and Smithsonian content all in the CBS All Access app for subscribers. So they're kind of sweetening the deal for what that is. And then to do this Showtime bundle too through Apple TV Plus, that's pretty interesting. So I mean, I'll just get more for the same price. But if it comes down to renewing, then it's like, well, this is a much better deal than it was before. So it's still incentive to renew as well.
Yeah. I think they should do more deals like this.
And
it's the
first of its kind, right?
Yeah. Like Apple hasn't done, TV Plus bundles before like this. So I think they should do more like with all the other Apple TV channels, and obviously they just have to negotiate with each partner. And,
yeah.
You know, if they say we join together, we'll give you an extra dollar or something and you'll put your price down by a dollar or something.
Yeah.
The back end deals are interesting there, but I think it makes sense. Like, Apple TV Plus is a small content catalog by design, and it's always going to be a small content catalog. If you can, pair up with someone else to give a big content catalog plus the Apple Originals, you're going to ultimately increase the number of subscribers to both TV Plus and the third-party channel. So it seems like a pretty good deal. Like, obviously, Disney's not going to join in, but you can imagine, if Apple and Disney paired up and said you could get both Disney Plus and Apple TV Plus for, $9.99 a month, yeah. It would be very popular.
Yeah, if you look at the Apple TV channels list of services, it updates often, and each service is pretty pricey on its own. I mean, usually it's more than $5 and it's around $10. And it's the idea there is that you pay for the channel as if it were like a cable bundle, but it's unbundled, and you pay for on demand and streaming. I guess it varies by service, but, there are some I would want to pay for maybe four or five of these, and that would be a pretty compelling package of entertainment. But to do them individually is not compelling because it becomes, so pricey that you might as well pay for cable or something. So I would love to see more of this, even if it's kind of generic and it's just put two or three together, and then Apple gives you the savings and, just decides that it's worth it on their end. There's a quick update on this on the Fortnite story. Spotify supports Epic. They say we applaud Epic Games' decision to take a stand against Apple and shed further light on Apple's abuse of its dominant position. Apple's unfair practices have disadvantaged competitors and deprived consumers for far too long. The stakes for consumers and app developers, large and small, couldn't be higher. And ensuring the iOS platform operates competitively and fairly is an urgent task with far-reaching implications. So they're getting what they wanted in that they have more people on their site finally.
Yeah, Spotify's happy.
Yeah, they're thrilled. Yeah. All right. Yeah, but more bundles, bring them on. And then speaking of bundles, we mentioned at the beginning of the show that, or near the beginning, that Mark Gurman at Bloomberg, our former colleague, has an excellent story this week on the Apple One bundle, which is, based on Mark's reporting, what Apple is going to call their service. So it's kind of the equivalent of, an Amazon Prime, for example. It's pay one price, and you get any number of services. He actually breaks down what the different options are going to be. So what is Apple One?
Yeah, so he says that, obviously we've been talking about the bundling stuff for a while, ever since Apple announced News Plus, TV Plus, Arcade. It was obvious at some point they were going to do a bundle. And so according to Gurman, the bundle's coming alongside the new iPhone 12 in October, and it will be part of iOS 14. Currently internally dubbed Apple One. That might be the final branding name. We're not entirely 100% on that, but Apple One's a perfectly fine name for me.
That's what makes it hard to take, is that it's pretty good.
Yeah, for Apple's naming schemes, Apple One's like, okay.
That's pretty good compared to, like, you know, adding a plus or something in it.
Yeah, like, Apple Plus would be okay, but half their content services don't have pluses in the name, so it'd be kind of awkward. It'd be like, you know, because you have News Plus.
And you plus. Mentioned that it's Apple TV Plus is often referred to in the press as Apple Plus because it's, you know, it's what makes it distinct.
I mean, clearly they have suboptimal naming there. Like, I don't know, but it might be too late to change it. But Apple One, for like the overarching thing, is probably fine. Mm-hmm. Although, somewhat hilariously, the Apple One subscription is really like four different subscriptions because they're going to offer different packages.
You take your weakness and you mark that as your strength. What's happening here.
There'll basically be, according to German, there'll be different tiers based on what you want. So if you, obviously you can buy all the services individually like you can today. If you wanted music and TV Plus, you can get a small discount, like $1 or $2, combined buying them separately. And these would be focused on family plans. So Apple Music is $15 for family plan, Apple TV Plus is $5. So at the moment you pay $20 in this Apple One bundle version, it would be like $17 or something. So that's the kind of, at least, and again, final pricing and details and stuff can change. But this is just what German's working on here. Mm-hmm. So that'd be one of your Apple One bundles. But you could add on News Plus. First you could add on Apple Arcade as well. So then you could have a combination of music, TV Plus, and Arcade for a discount. Then there'd be a tier above that, which adds News Plus. And then finally there'd be, you know, the Super Mega Bundle, which is music, TV Plus, Arcade, News Plus, and iCloud storage.
And so you couldn't say, like, for example, I pay for Apple Music, I have for years. I pay for iCloud storage, I have for years. And I plan on paying for Apple TV Plus once it renews. So those are the three things that I pay for now. I'm not opposed to News Plus, but I don't think it's a good value for the money for me. Mm-hmm. Arcade, I paid for the first year. I don't plan to renew it just based on... It isn't like the only game service that my kids use, and so I don't think it's the best one for the kids.
Unless you can get it for free or close to free.
Right. For me, I'm comparing is the price of music, TV, and iCloud cheaper than the top bundle that has everything else.
Which it won't be, right,
because that's the point of a bundle.
German says that your savings will be upwards of $5, so probably somewhere between $5 and $10 if you... And that's on the highest end bundle, right? If you're getting everything. So a family plan of music, TV Plus, News Plus, Arcade, and let's say the 2 terabyte iCloud storage is $45 currently. So at maximum, the Apple One version is going to be $35. So if you're only subscribing to three services now, you're going to be at $25. So you're going to be better off with your current arrangement.
Yeah, I do 15 for Apple Music. That's the family plan. Yeah. And then I think it's, what, $10 for the 2 terabyte plan?
Yeah.
iCloud? Okay, so that's
25.
That's me at 35 right there a month, and then TV I pay for by the year for, so it's 100.
TV's $50 a year.
Oh, $50 a year.
It's $5 a month, isn't it?
Yeah, 100 would be crazy. No way. Yeah. So 50 for the year. So yeah, it's gonna be tough for a bundle to beat the individual of what I use. It'll just come down to right now I'm looking at. I think News Plus is more interesting to me than Arcade, but Arcade would be included with the bundle. So
because it doesn't sound like you could go, like, say if you wanted music, TV Plus, and news, it doesn't sound like it's going to work that way. Similarly, say if you use Spotify, but you want a bundle of TV Plus and news and Arcade, it doesn't sound like you're going to be able to do that either, because it's like Apple Music is included in the base tier.
It's kind of funny because the primer for the bundle is the most successful service, I imagine, being music. And then you take...
I think the service they care about the most is TV, right? Apart from music. So that's probably why that's the next one on the list.
Yeah, they care about TV a lot because it's an original service, not a repacked service. And
they're spending billions on it.
They're spending a lot of money on it.
Yeah.
And then next would be news, is that right?
It's Arcade.
Arcade next, which makes more sense because it's like... You know, it's got value. It's, you know, if you want that, it's cool. But if you want a bundle with news in it, then you've got to pay for the Arcade part as well for the bundle. And news is like arguably the most, the priciest of the bunch for what you get.
Right. Cause the news is $10. Yeah. So Apple Music is technically the most expensive. 15,
which half goes to the publishers based on activity and then Apple.
So that's probably
half.
Why news is higher up on the tiers because they want the base tiers to be cheaper, but they can't do that with News Plus because it's $9.99.
Right.
So.
And then it's too bad to put iCloud at the very top.
You know where they did that, though, right? Because everybody needs iCloud. Like, that's where they did it.
Yeah, but either you get iCloud or you don't. It seems like to me, and people, maybe they'll change the prices for iCloud because the base storage is too little. You know, you pay a dollar.
That feels like so long ago when all we were worrying about in the Apple services space is when are they going to make iCloud plans cheaper? Yeah. Now many services are they going to bundle on before we can buy iCloud?
Yeah, this is a really good story, though, because it breaks down. You know, we've been skeptical of the utility of a bundle because will it actually be compelling or is it just everything thrown together? And because it's not like you build your own bundle, it's not as compelling as it could be. And because they kind of weigh their services differently, then, you know, it's not as attractive as it could be.
Right. So me looking at this, I currently subscribe to 2+ and Arcade, but like you, I'm thinking of canceling Arcade. Yeah. Not that I think it has some good games on there, but...
Well, it doesn't have Fortnite, so who cares?
It has some good games on there, but, you know, you're not compelled to subscribe to everything. So I was thinking about unsubscribing to Arcade. So then I would be looking at Music, TV Plus, and iCloud. So I guess I'll just do the Apple One Music and TV Plus and save $2 and then just pay for iCloud independently, I guess is what I'd have to do.
Yeah. So we'll see these play out. And
just to add on to all of this now, German also says in the higher end plan, they're going to add virtual fitness classes.
So is it that you won't be able to pay for those individually, or is it that they'll also be included in the bundle?
It just says included in the bundle. Yeah, I assume they'll have a separate plan for them.
Yeah, because I mean, I think the first time we heard about this idea of like virtual fitness classes that you have access to is in our reporting of iOS 14 and tvOS 14. It's like there is evidence now that Apple is going to be delivering like fitness related content,
a fitness app for Apple TV.
Right. Exactly. And we've seen now that the Activity app is now the fitness app, and it just ties into more and more evidence for that. And this is the first time I believe that Mark reported this since our reporting. But it makes its way into the bundle story too. Now that one's interesting to me, and it's like one of those things where I can't make a call yet on if I'll use it or not. But it's certainly something I think I've floated that out there. It's like when I'm talking about the watch, that it's very cool what all the watch can track, but it doesn't often tell you, what you should do to activate, those different workouts, and did it really give you that guidance? You need to find a gym, find an app, find a trainer, whatever. And there's a lot of these services now that are like subscription based, and it's for what this would be. So it's an obvious service for Apple to have. So I'm happy it's existing. I'm not so sure if I'll be a customer or not, because that's different than should Apple do it or not. But hey, I'll evaluate it when it comes out.
And I'm sure they'll probably do like a free year of Apple Fitness when you buy an Apple Watch. Like, there's so many times.
That would be good.
In this story, Gurman says that they're considering a free year of Arcade when you get a new Apple
TV. That might be the fitness trial might be the new, the top new feature for Apple Watch this year. It's like, is a new way to use any Apple Watch that you have. So, seriously.
I think Apple, and just as a high level point, bundling stuff together is sensible. It definitely increases adoption. But at the end of the day, you can't just put stuff in a bundle and expect people to buy it. You still actually have to make the content.
It has to be compelling, right?
And so, and I saw a lot of people reacting to this story when we covered it and stuff today on Twitter. It's like, TV Plus is stupid. Like, what does it matter? It's like, Apple understands that right now these services need to be more compelling. Just putting them bundling together is one stage in doing it, right? You give a more attractive bundle, which can upsell people, and then you invest in the content side to provide more value. And, they keep, every week we hear new content deals for TV Plus. They're adding new games to Arcade every single, every other week, right? They added the audio stories to news. They're not just letting these things sit around doing nothing. Like, I think they get it. It's just, you got to give them time to build it all up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, last bit of breaking news as we're recording this. North Dakota is going to have a COVID-19 exposure notification app. So that's two states out of 50, Virginia and North Dakota. Good luck to South Dakota, which is a different state, and then all the other states in the U.S. Let's do some Q&A before we head off. So many of the questions were about Fortnite, and we covered that.
A lot of people are angry about the Fortnite.
Yeah.
Understandable.
That's right. But just to kind of clarify, it's not that they switched to a paid model up front. It's that they switched their payment method to being direct to Epic Games versus sharing a cut through app with Apple by in-app purchases. And so that,
right.
That's
so when you went to buy their V-Bucks, which are their in-game currency, previously it would just take you to the in-app purchase flow. Whereas the update today, it gave you the option. It said, do you want to pay with the Apple App Store or do you want to pay directly to us? And if you click directly to us, it would then bring up like a credit card form. You have to type in your card
information. Yeah. And it didn't, by Apple removing it from the App Store, they didn't delete it from people's phones. So it's still there on their iPhone, iPad, iPod Touch. You just can't go and get it for the first time. You can, it seems to be that you can recover it if you, from your purchase history, and you can restore that purchase, but you can't download it new again. Which does make me think about the pending, you know, what will happen with TikTok, and I guess WeChat now is in the mix. If those get banned in the U.S., I guess the servers aren't allowed to run to the U.S. Like, how will that look, do you think?
Who even knows?
Who even knows? Okay, it's unprecedented territory.
Yeah, we'll sort that out another
week. That's right.
Someone asked, are you guys personally disappointed that Fortnite's gone from the App Store? I don't play Fortnite, so it doesn't bother me, but I know other people that do play it, so they'd be mad. And for me personally, the thing that I am actually upset about is the game streaming stuff that we talked about.
Yeah.
I would actually use, I'd probably play games like that. Like, I don't actually own these game streaming services could theoretically offer you an alternative to buying the next generation console.
Sure.
Like, rather than buying a Xbox Series X or a PlayStation 5, you could just subscribe to Xbox Game Pass and just play the games virtually. And, you know, I guess I can play through my Mac, but I think, no, I should be able to play through Apple TV. Like, that'd be a great experience. Like, make the Apple TV even more of a console. So the game streaming thing is personally what I'm more frustrated about. The wider App Store issues are obviously what are highlighted by Epic pulling, you know, Fortnite being removed from the store. And clearly we've already said that we expect something to change there. I don't think Apple deserves 0%, but there needs to be some balance in between where we are now and where everyone else wants them to be.
Yeah, someone asked about the kind of the famous Steve Jobs line that he cracked TV, in that Apple is going to change the TV landscape for forever, and the notion that kind of just kind of went away. And I think the source of that is from his biographer and the not so great biography that, you know, even though Steve Jobs picked his biographer, the book wasn't a hit, and that line came from there. So it's kind of like secondhand, and there's,
well, it's a quote. It's a Jobs quote in the biography.
Okay.
So,
but there's not enough context around it to like point to. Did you mean a TV set? Did you mean an Apple TV with TVOS? Did you mean Apple TV channels?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Or none of the above.
I think he wanted to make a TV set.
Yeah.
And if you there's a document that came out of the Samsung Apple patent trials, you know, where they were suing over the iPhone. Copying the iPhone design, there was a meeting agenda from that was written by Jobs, and one of the things on the list is Apple TV, and this is right around the time the biographer would have been getting these quotes, and one of the things on the list is magic wand ? So that was kind of the status of the Apple TV situation. I'm pretty sure they had ideas about how to make a revolutionary TV experience, or in their opinion what was going to be a revolutionary TV experience, but it wasn't like fully formed or ready to go out the door. It was like, you know, prepping stage. We were thinking about it. We were thinking about making a TV set. And then for whatever reason, it never transpired. If you look at it's an open secret that from 2012 through to like 2015, Apple was trying to negotiate with Disney and Fox and all these other content networks to do a skinny bundle type deal, which maybe would have been one of their original plans for a television, you know, revolution television situation, but that never came through. Jobs, I think the Jobs quote is like, I want to make an integrated television set that is synced with iCloud, and it will have the simplest user interface that you can imagine. Maybe he was just talking about Siri. Like, who even knows? Like, if it was something so good in the wings, they would have done it, but they didn't do it.
Mm-hmm. It was an iMac TV as well.
Jeremy,
go ahead.
Wagsback says, if you have an issue with Apple and the App Store, do you also have an issue with Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo limiting other storefronts on Xbox, PlayStation, and Switch? That is a hard question, and that's where the law comes into play, right? Because obviously on a games console, you know, Microsoft's not going to let Google Stadia run on the Xbox, right? So why is Microsoft angry that the App Store can't have it? That is a good question, and maybe when Apple gets to a courtroom, they can make an argument that an iOS device is like a console and they don't really control it. So, you know, say goodbye and, you know, there's no case there. Personally, it feels wrong to me that they can't exist on the platform. Like, And am I, whereas Microsoft, Sony, and like there is this distinction between like games consoles and just like computing.
I think a lot of it is like the popularity of the device, like an so and what you're saying is the console's a console. It's like a, it's an appliance for gaming. An iPhone or an iPad is so much more than that. And so to ban it from this category is like an overreach. I think that's also just, you know, these rules weren't challenged so much when the iPhone was smaller in market share and the iPad was smaller in market share. It's once they become so successful is when,
right,
then these become uncomfortable. It's just like how we were discussing with News Plus. It's like, you know, it's kind of mad that it's kind of like, who cares if they still a little bit of traffic by default? Yeah, it's not that like, much, but in this case, they are affecting a major audience.
And it's hard to like market. Nail down a hard and fast, you know, checklist. Yeah, of this is okay and this isn't. Yeah. But you kind of know it when you see it, right? And for me personally, I think game streaming services should be out on the App Store, but they should be forced to conform to the net purchase policy, right? If they were having just saying, we're not going to be on the App Store because we don't want to give Apple 30%, I mean, okay, that's understandable, right? Obviously, then you can have the separate conversation about the 30% debate, but just the raw fact that they're going to completely deny an entire category of service from the platform, that doesn't sit right with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then finally, one last question we'll do this week. What is one rumored feature supposedly coming to the next flagship iPhones or Apple Watches that for some reason you're just not believing in? And my answer to that question is more along like it's when you're in this position to report these things out, to kind of analyze, is this rumor, what does it weigh versus this rumor? It's kind of your job to make sense of things. And so you either, you know, believe it at the start or don't. And so once it becomes like you perpetuate the rumor, then you must believe in it, and we don't kind of push things that we don't believe in. And so it's hard to say like something that's in the mainstream that we disbelieve because otherwise we ignore it. So like random claims on Twitter are going to be ones that we.
And unfortunately, recently there have been a lot of random Twitter accounts popping up.
Yeah, right? Yeah. There are so
many at the moment. And most of them don't have a track record yet. Like we've covered Love to Dream.
Yeah.
We've covered John Prosser stuff before because they've proven themselves, mm-hmm. right? But there's a lot of just completely anonymous Twitter accounts popping up that a lot of websites are covering mm-hmm. that I don't think is justified because they're just making up rubbish.
Yeah,
and none of it's been proven.
And yet. We pass over them for that reason. I mean, it's easy to, you can get easy attention from those, but it's also a disservice to readers because it's like, you know, anyone can go out and find those. But part of the service of 95 Mac is making sense of it all. And
there's a curation aspect there, right?
Indeed, yeah. So I was thinking with this too. It's also like, you know, when you do this stuff too, it affects like how you listen to podcasts and things. So like, I'm finding that lately, many of the podcasts I listen to are not tech podcasts, even though those are the ones that I used to love the most. They're science, they're political, they're news, they're general. And it's because like hearing, you know, multiple takes on the things that I've already like processed for and you know we trade off with each other is like it just changed like being in this position changes the value of that. And so I sure. think if I were just like someone who didn't do this but it was like you're just evaluating, you know, the rumors on its own, then it'd be like, are there really going to be 4 iPhone models this year? That's kind of crazy, you know. What does that do? But it because we know the sourcing there, it's totally believable. It's more
yeah
that, you know, it's a matter of time.
I guess if you want a direct answer to the question, I'd say the 120 hertz rumor, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't think, as much as I want it to happen, promotion on the iPhone, I think if it was happening, Quo or Bloomberg would have reported it by now, and they haven't. It's just mm-hmm. been reported by much shadier sources,
sure.
and even that's kind of petered out. So people expecting promotion on the iPhone, I would start to water down your expectations a little bit.
There we go.
Unfortunately,
or event dates and release dates and this kind of things too. So
right, I don't think the dates are set in stone yet either. No, so right. I mean, obviously, Apple said that the iPhone's coming in October, so we know that much.
Yeah, and an iPhone will come in October at least. So yeah. Maybe there'll be some November phones too. All right, that is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. If you enjoyed the show, you can watch us live on YouTube at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on Thursday afternoons. You can also subscribe in Apple Podcast, Overcast, Spotify. I don't think we're on Fortnite yet, if you can listen to podcasts on Fortnite. Remember when the biggest Fortnite drama was that they were selling dance moves?
And Apple was collecting 30% of every transaction.
They sure were. And you can also rate the show if you enjoy it. We really appreciate that. If you have any feedback for us, you can email us together at happyhour@9to5mac.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ApolloZach. And I also write for SpaceExplored.com. Benjamin, you are on Twitter at
BZAMayo.
And you also blog at
BZAMayo.com.
All right. We will be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.